Welcome to Questions in Sustainability, a science-based podcast series that explores programs, people, and ideas in sustainability of food systems. I am Professor Paul Vincelli, and today's guest is Dr. Garrett Owen, an assistant professor of horticultural science at the University of Kentucky. I'll say a little bit about Garrett before introducing him. He's an assistant professor of floriculture and specialty crop production in greenhouses and controlled environments. His areas of expertise are controlled environment, specialty crop production, plant nutrition, production problem diagnosis. For diagnosis, I'm a plant pathologist, so I resonate with that. And also another area of expertise is herbaceous perennial plant propagation. His extension and research efforts focus on ornamental, specialty, and food crop production systems, culture, and practices. So, Garrett, welcome to Questions in Sustainability. We're glad to have you.
Thank you for having me today. I'm very excited to be here.
So you, I like to start podcasts such as this by maybe getting a little bit of personal history, and it can be as far back as you wish. How did you become interested in this area of sort of intensified plant production? How far does it go back?
It actually goes back, I would say, to middle school, high school. Oh. I enrolled, I guess it was my sophomore year of high school, into an agriculture class. So horticulture one is where my interest started, working in the greenhouse. At the time, my ag teacher, I believe it was his first year teaching, and maybe not had his lessons prepared quite yet. So we spent a great deal in the greenhouse working. And what I became interested in was propagating some of these easy to root hanging basket plants. And I thought to myself, it's like, oh, this is really cool that we can take a plant and stick it into a substrate and then it produces roots. I just thought that was amazing. So after talking with him a little bit and talking with my mother and father, decided to establish a supervised agricultural experience. And that was establishing my own greenhouse business.
Wow.
So we built a greenhouse, but also my family was in agriculture. So it wasn't something new. It was just another addition to the enterprise that my family had going on at the time. So as I continued through high school, I thought I wanted to be an ag teacher. So mm-hmm. to share those experiences with other students and see that interest to be piqued in those horticulture classes. So I attended NC State University for agricultural education, but also continued my greenhouse business during my undergraduate degree. Mm-hmm. But halfway through my freshman year, I switched out of ag ed because I fell in love with the horticulture class. I switched majors and never looked back. It was just a full sprint towards that horticulture degree. And like I said, I continued that greenhouse business all the way through until I graduated with my undergraduate degree. But also during that time, I did an internship with a 30-acre commercial floriculture operation in North Carolina. And what I thought I wanted to be a greenhouse grower, I quickly realized that that was not what I wanted to do with my career. So I decided to pursue a higher degree. I stayed at NC State and earned my master's degree. And that's where one of my committee members was the state specialist for floriculture production. So he would actually take me out on greenhouse visits. And I got to work with growers, learn the diagnostics process in terms of if they were having any production challenges or issues. And I really enjoyed that. And I thought to myself, it's like, I could see myself doing this one day. So after earning my master's degree, in which I was still doing my greenhouse business at that time, I decided to pursue a higher degree. And that's where I moved all the way from North Carolina to Lafayette or West Lafayette, Indiana, to pursue my PhD at Purdue University in greenhouse and controlled environments. So this degree was a very non-traditional track. I was a full-time research technician for the Greenhouse Controlled Environment Lab and part-time PhD student. So I worked with my advisor and the leader of the lab to coordinate a lot of the undergraduates, other PhD students, master's students. But I was also introduced to various controlled environments in which we did research under, and then different cropping systems. So after spending quite a few years at Purdue University, I finally finished up. I was not running my greenhouse business at that time, you know, being 12 hours away. So it was not something that my family could do, but I was still interested in floriculture with some interest in food crop production under controlled environments. So after leaving Purdue University, I became a faculty member at Michigan State University, but I was, again, a non-traditional track. So I was faculty, but I was stationed off campus in Metro Detroit because I was non-tenured, but I was an outreach specialist. So 85% extension or outreach, 15% research. So I was working with over 300 greenhouse growers in the Metro Detroit area. And then after that, I joined the Department of Horticulture in May of 2020 here at the University of Kentucky.
I actually, it's interesting to get a chance to talk to you. We have not talked to each other. We've not crossed paths professionally because we're in different buildings. And so it's great actually to get a chance to meet you. There are a lot of assistant professors that hired in the last 10 years that I don't know, and you're certainly one of them. Great experience, really great experience for what you're doing here at the University of Kentucky. I do want to report to the listeners that neither of us have conflicts of interest in this area. So that's hopefully reassuring. Great for that. Thanks for that introduction. So I have to admit, I have some concept of controlled environment production, but I'd really like to hear from you because I think you just understand the topic better. What are we talking about here for the sake of the listeners who may not really understand fully this approach?
So controlled environment production can be any type of enclosed structure, such as a greenhouse, warehouse, shipping container, that we can control the environment, that being light, temperature, humidity. It could be gases such as carbon dioxide enrichment or injection, but it's any, like I said, enclosed environment that we can control. And in some instances, greenhouses do have sidewalls that come up and down for ventilation, but again, that is a controlled environment. What we do not consider a controlled environment would be like a high tunnel, for example. It's more semi-controlled because most high tunnels do not have these advanced control operating systems to control heat, for example.
So there's a great picture on the internet on controlled environment. We'll try to get one for our website here, but it's the company is called AppHarvest. And this is why it's important for you all to know that we don't have conflicts of interest. We don't own any part of that company. But if you Google that, you see some really striking pictures of like 60 acres of crops under glass, I believe, right? Out in eastern Kentucky. And it's just remarkable. What do you work with systems like that?
Yes, that's correct. So with my extension outreach teaching and research program, I am investigating different systems that is being implemented or may be implemented in large commercial operations such as AppHarvest or Kentucky Fresh, but also systems that can be utilized and adapted for medium to small size growers as well. So the controlled environment industry is really a gamut of growers with different levels of technology.
Okay, so that's interesting. Yeah, I tend to maybe have a bias towards the big operators when you think of these kinds of systems, and certainly they're out there. But I appreciate the interest in the small producers as well, and I'm sure many of our listeners do. So that's great. So again, I think if the listener can get an idea of what we're talking about here by going to the web and seeing the picture that I mentioned, what are they going to see if they walk into one of these facilities with you?
If they walk into a large commercial operating facility, they are going to see these food crops, such as tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, for example, which we consider those vine crops. And those are going to be suspended So they're going to be grown in soilless media or soilless substrate, usually coconut core, which is the husk of coconut that's been milled down and compressed, or rock wool. So there is no soil whatsoever. All the nutrients and water are being provided. These crops are suspended from the greenhouse structure, the infrastructure. You're going to see supplemental lighting, so adding light to what the ambient sunlight is providing. You'll see energy curtains or shade curtains being retracted or deployed to manipulate that environment that is inducive to grow these crops to produce a high quality marketable product such as a tomato.
Yeah. And so why would a grower take these approaches? They sound expensive. I'm not opposed. I'm asking the questions that might be out in the audience, but why would a grower go through all this?
That is a good question. So it's to, for the most part, fill a market void or produce a specialty crop as well, or for year-round production. Now, if you go to a more smaller to mid-sized grower, you won't see these as advanced technologies that you would typically see at a large commercial operation. You will see technologies, but they are more adapted to these more smaller mid-sized growers, and hopefully staying within their budget to be able to produce a marketable crop as well. So it really comes down to what technologies that they can have, and then the bottom dollar. Are they going to make a profit off of growing this commodity in the greenhouse under controlled environment conditions?
And I imagine that's something that your extension program focuses on, is helping growers make those decisions. Is this an appropriate technology for my system or not?
That's correct. So, you know, economic analysis, carbon footprinting, water footprinting is some considerations that we are pursuing with some of these production systems, which my research program is focusing on greenhouse grown cucumbers. So basically taking systems that can be utilized to grow greenhouse tomatoes, because they're most commonly grown in Kentucky, and how can we diversify the cropping system? So that's where I pursued cucumbers, but then having that water, carbon footprinting, the economic analysis behind it, is it profitable for me to use supplemental lighting to grow my cucumbers in the greenhouse or not?
So, this is all, again, very interesting to me as a plant pathologist, and maybe we'll talk about diseases in a few minutes. But one thing that really struck me when I read about your work was, and again, folks, this is the first time we've talked to each other. But I read that you had collaborations with Dutch researchers and Dutch farming organizations and so on. And that's a very significant point, because as I understand Dutch production system, horticulture production systems, they're very intensified. They're very skilled at doing the kinds of controlled environment production that you're talking about, and are known the world over for what they do. So I thought that was a point that certainly I was interested in, and I expect many of our listeners will be as well. So tell us about your collaborations with the Dutch.
That's correct. So we have multiple collaborations, and the first one that I will really speak upon is student and faculty exchanges. So in collaboration with AppHarvest, the University of Kentucky, along with other universities throughout the Commonwealth, have established collaborations with Fontes University and Haas Universities. And then the second one that I'm going to touch base on is a future collaboration that we're going to have with Bakkenhagen University. But the overall goal with these collaborations is to, like I had mentioned earlier, student and faculty exchanges between each of the universities, so that we can have Dutch students or European students come over to Kentucky, learn our systems, intern at AppHarvest, and either A, find a job here in the Commonwealth with the Agritech Horti Center development that we're having, that we're working towards here in Kentucky, or to go back and just learn from their experiences here in the U.S. On the other hand, that's where we're hoping to actually send students from the University of Kentucky to universities in the Netherlands, be able to provide that experience, become educated, learn more about controlled environment production, and come back and implement that education here in the Commonwealth as well?
Well, certainly, I'm quite envious of your opportunities that lie ahead. Wageningen University, the Dutch systems in general, it's going to be a great career for you and your students, great experiences. I wish my skill at speaking Spanish was somehow useful because I would volunteer to come along. But anyway, let's take a short break, very short break, folks, maybe about a minute or so of just for a musical interlude to give a chance to refresh the mind. And we'll come back to speak to Dr. Garrett Owen, horticulturist and professor, assistant professor at the University of Kentucky. Welcome back to Questions in Sustainability. This is Paul Vincelli. I'm a professor at the University of Kentucky. And anyway, we're talking to Dr. Garrett Owen, also from the University of Kentucky in the Department of Horticulture. And Garrett, thanks once again for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate being here today and being part of this.
So my mind is just full with questions. We're not going to get to nearly all of them, but I am curious. These are very different production systems from the normal field-grown produce in, you know, rows and so on that we might be used to. Are they? Do you envision these replacing eventually field-grown produce? Are they so efficient, perhaps, that they're going to displace field-grown produce production?
Well, that's a good question, and I will give you my opinion based off of my experience. Is that I do not think that controlled environment horticulture commodities, such as food crops grown under greenhouse conditions, will replace field-grown produce or crops. I believe it is a way for us to supplement the commodities that are being produced in the field, but also it will help with transportation and food deserts. That is what I believe that we will see the niche that controlled environments will fill in terms of food scarcity, food deserts, and then just supplementation of field production.
So being able to provide for high quality produce for people who are maybe long distances away from urban areas where the food, the availability of high quality produce is much better. Is that right?
That's correct. And actually being more locally grown as well, more self-sustaining as a nation.
Yeah. So the title of the podcast program is Questions in Sustainability. So here, let me frame this, and I'd like you to take it in all the directions you wish to. So I when I think of the Dutch systems that I've read about, I've not visited, but the first thing that comes to mind is how can they afford to to pay the energy costs of these systems? Yeah, that would be one question. Let's talk more about the sustainability issues regarding the system, maybe starting with energy, but going on beyond there.
So I will say the energy for greenhouse production is the second most expense that greenhouse growers will have behind labor. So with greenhouse production, of course, during winter months, we need heating to produce these crops. It's just not the ideal situation. And then during summer months, we need ventilation. So we always have heaters, fans running, and then to make sure that the crop has enough light to produce a high quality, say tomato or cucumber, we need to use supplemental lighting. And that can be either lighting throughout the full crop cycle during a day. So like for 16 hours to maintain a certain photo period to achieve a daily light integral, or we use light triggers in terms of our technology that once we hit a threshold of light intensities, this light will turn off and on. So when we take all this into consideration, it is a very energy intensive production system. However, there has been recent movement in, I would say, the past 10, 20 years or so to look at how can we conserve our energies in terms of this crop production system. So looking at energy use efficiency from lighting sources, shifting from high pressure sodium lamps or HID lamps that are very wasteful in terms of converting energy into light energy to the plants, into shifting that to LED lighting that is more cost effective as well. So, you know, looking at how we can change our technologies to be more energy conscious, but also finding methods to power the greenhouse in terms of, you know, solar power. Can we, instead of lighting during times of the day where there's surges in power from commercial operations, but from homeowners, can we power the greenhouse such light in the middle of the night when homeowners are not using so much energy as well? And maybe it's a little bit cheaper at that point in time. So, you know, the science is still underway to determine how can we really be more energy conscious, not only from like lighting, but also heating that greenhouse as well.
Right. Yeah. So research in the direction of improving the efficiency of the systems, another thing, I think this is my own words, but I think it represents what you said. These are not necessarily production systems that will displace field-grown produce, but fit in as part of a more diversified food system. Is that the way? Can we think about it that way?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay, so I'm a plant pathologist. So one of the phrases or quotes that I love from the world of science is by Robert Merton. He's a sociologist at both MIT and Harvard, and he said most institutions demand unqualified faith, but the institution of science makes skepticism a virtue. And we trained scientists learn to really value skepticism in ourselves and in our colleagues. And so here's an example. So I think as a plant pathologist of 60 acres, maybe it's not 60 acres of one crop, but there must be a lot of acres under glass of one crop. I see that as a monoculture, and you have the benefits of monoculture, which you know better than I am sure. But then you have that possibility for disease and insect pests propagation. How much of an impediment to success are infectious diseases and insect pests?
So first and foremost, as you know, if you can start clean and stay clean is the best method in terms of greenhouse production, regardless of what crop that you're growing. But for a lot of these food crop operations, they are monocultured in terms of just growing one crop under production So in terms of diseases, you know, what we typically see out in the field can come into the greenhouse if care is not taken to stay clean. However, and the same for pests as well. However, you know, there is advances in terms of disease and pest control, and along with restrictions as well. So what we typically see in the industry is more biological pest control for these food crops instead of spraying these conventional chemicals. There are other like organics that can be utilized in the greenhouse, and the same for disease. But again, it comes down to starting and staying clean. But again, these pests and diseases that are found in the fields can wind up in the greenhouse as well.
Yeah. And so, and to add to your point, it is possible under glass or plastic to control the environment in a way that reduces disease and certain diseases and certain insects. And so that may result in less fungicide use, for example, pesticides that control fungi. So yeah, that's, While I think about the negative consequences as a possibility, I also acknowledge that there would be some control there. And I think you're saying that these are potentially surmountable problems with enough attention.
That's correct. Yeah. And a lot of these operations have, you know, pest disease teams that are monitoring the crop, you know, out there checking, making sure if something needs to be sprayed or something needs to be roped or, you know, anything that has lead to cause concern for these crops, not only from a biotic standpoint, but a abiotic standpoint as well.
So what would you, Garrett, consider the number one aspect of these production systems, pro or con?
I think the number one would probably be the amount of waste that our current production systems produce. And when I say waste, that can be organic and inorganic waste as well. So with the organic waste, we can find ways to reutilize that and put that back into our ecosystems, such as composting per se. And then other waste could be, you know, these non-organic products such as rock wool. But there are alternatives that growers can consider, such as coconut coir, or biodegradable products such as vine clips or the twine that suspend these crops from the infrastructure. So there are, you know, these non-sustainable methods, but there are alternatives to these products that are actually being implemented. It's just making sure that we can mitigate and implement these technologies. So like I said, we can mitigate these wastes.
Yeah. See, and this is great to hear you speak like this. I think back, my career in the university has been 32 years, I think, something like 2 years at the University of Wyoming makes it about 34. And you know, we weren't interested in damaging the environment back when I first started, but there wasn't as much really forethought to some of the issues of environment. The way it seems very natural for the younger generation of professors to think about these things the way you just illustrated. So if a graduate student were listening in today and was fascinated by these production systems, what would your counsel be as far as one of the most important research questions? I'm not asking you to reveal your competitive aspects of your program, but what would be useful for graduate students to think about if they were interested in the production systems you are describing?
Some advice I would give undergraduate or graduate students is to actually, if they have the opportunity to go visit an operation, to actually see the different types of production systems that are utilized. So what is the system that's utilized for lettuce is totally different from the system that is utilized for tomatoes. And within tomatoes itself, there's various systems. However, for those vine crops, tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, you know, they can be adapted to any type of system. And then learn as much as possible in terms of all your plant science classes, but also math, literature, you know, everything takes into account and is connected within controlled environments, data analysis, statistics. We take everything into account.
Yeah, really good advice. Really good. Yeah. In fact, I had a question or two that has escaped me as I think about what you say. But that's great. Maybe we can move towards closure here by asking, is there anything else you would like our listeners to know about today's topic? It's a great topic. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I'll tell you what, Garrett, I'm definitely not too old to learn. So maybe we can go out together sometime. I'll tag along and see some of the systems that you're describing and learn from you. That'd be great.
Excellent. I would welcome you anytime.
Excellent. Let's do that. So is there anything else you would like our listeners to know about today's topic?
Not off the top of my head at the moment. I know something will come to me as soon as we're done today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's fine. We'll talk about it in the car.
Okay. That sounds great. I appreciate that.
So once again, Dr. Garrett Owen from the University of Kentucky's Department of Horticulture. And we've been listening to him share his insights on controlled plant environment. Thanks again for joining us, Garrett. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate being here and having the opportunity to talk about controlled environment and horticulture.
And to the listener, we tempt you with next month's topic. We will be talking to Dr. Maren Brewer from the University of Georgia, and she'll tell us about her work that has been published on how certain fungicides used on certain crops can erode the therapeutic value of certain human medications that are used for fungal disease control. That's right, fungicide use on crops affecting the therapeutic value of human medications for fungal disease control. It's going to be a very interesting topic, and so I hope you'll join us in the coming month. And once again, you've been listening to Questions in Sustainability. I'm Paul Vincelli, and thanks for listening.